All right, so thank you guys for coming out. 2:30 on a Monday. This is awesome. I was thinking there was going to be like two people.
I was going to be surprised if there was two people.
Yeah, yeah. So
let me guess. All of your planes are really late, and you just got no place better to be.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Dealer room's full. All right, so CISA, we're going to go through, you know, and talk about a couple different aspects, a couple different perspectives. EFF has published their perspective and opinions pretty clearly, and we can go over those as well. So let's kind of get a feel for the room. Who in here is like, feels like they're, you know, law experts, and they're here to really dive into the language of the law and how it how it affects no hands there. We got one lawyer in the room, so he will be lying, and I'll be making stuff up. So basically, in essence, CISA Act was meant to be a way of clearing the roadblocks to be able to allow private and public, the government and private companies to share indicators of compromise and other types of security data to, you know, help everybody out. You know, it's like if we have open source tools out there that collects data from a lot of different sources, we have particular security vendors that pull all of their data together, and it's like, what if we could just, you know, be one big happy family and say America and be able to have all of that data together. So that's the pipe dream. And of course, the reality has been a little bit more nuanced. What's in the data, who's going to control the data, who's going to have access to that data, and there was also a thought of when we talk about clearing roadblocks was also giving some liability protection, and we can talk a little bit about that as well. So basically, out of the CISA, that was basically tacked on, stapled to the back of a funding bill, and got through a lot of Obama's technical bills have happened like that. I remember the HIPAA bill that actually gave HIPAA some funding and some teeth to actually go and start cracking down was one of those that got stapled on. So what we have is basically privacy issues of what data and where is it and where to go is the practical use of actually sharing data with the government, and then the internet doesn't have borders. So I'd also like to talk about a little bit about the implication of the EU, and America has a very different idea of privacy than the EU, and they've got a lot of very strict laws about it. So we can touch on that. DJ,
well, let me just throw in a little bit on the language of the statute itself, just so we can have a little bit of a floor for the discussion today. One of the first things that's most intriguing about the bill is that the bill set out a structure to create another bill. Essentially, it set out language that said, here's what we want. We want companies to be able to share. We want data to be able to be shared, but privacy to be protected. And we want we want some protections against liability for people for sharing this data. And somebody will figure that out later. The bill expressly calls for them to make rules and guidelines that would be posted within 6 months of the bill. And those have been up, and I've reviewed those. Those were actually better than I thought they'd be. But I think there's still a ways to go. And unfortunately, that's the nature of a bill like this is you're dealing with guys like me writing bills, right? I'm an English major. I don't know crap about, I barely know how to make my laptop work. And half the time I don't, I call my IT guy, okay? I'm the guy then who's writing laws about how we're going to share technology data and cyber threats and what quantifies as a cyber threat. You know, those are all guys like me who have no idea. They're politicians, they're lawyers, they're non-tech people who are trying to create these bills. So that's part of the interesting element of the bill that was passed. Is the bill that was passed is really a framework on which to hang later guidelines, which will hopefully then allow for the actual sharing of data as intended. The other thing that that I wanted to discuss about the language of the bill that I think we need to cover a little bit here today is the questions of privacy. What can be monitored, what should be monitored, what is being monitored, and what is being shared or isn't being shared. So those are all things I think we should sort of cover today as we're going through this bill.
Is anybody in the room, in the roles in their companies, considered sharing data with the government through CISA? Is there anybody in here that would be in that role? Because it's been, a couple months. This was passed in December of last year. And I was trying to find, doing a lot of research to try to find if anybody's actually, shared data and experiences and using that avenue and how hard is it? At this point, the practicalities of the law is still out for question, right? It's like, as we were talking at before the panel, this might be nobody uses it. We talk a lot about the privacy implications and get scared and get fussy and EU goes and passes even more draconian laws to deal with us crazy Americans and then we don't end up using it. I see scenarios like think about PCI. So when you got PCI and you go and you screw up and you get a PCI violation, one of the options they can do is put you at the most stringent range of PCI, which you have to get reviews once a year. You have to give something once a month, and I mean there's just a lot of they can just basically put you in the hot seat for until you can you're on like probation. What if the situation were to occur like take Target for example, and if the CISA law was around then, so this was a big deal, affected a lot of Americans. Not that they can require, but they sure can kind of make it known that Target will share their data moving forward. As part of being security fuck ups and you now you're going to be part of this program because it's for the greater good. I see that happening, but I'd love to hear y'all's perspective on what you think that the actual the realities of actually sharing with the government.
See, here's my thought on that. I gave a talk on this right about the time that the guidelines were printed, February or March of this year, and at that time, we had just seen the guidelines, so I had a little more insight of what was going on. But my speech had primarily been prepared in advance, and my thought was that there wasn't going to be any use of this at all. We were all having a big hissy fit over a bill that passed and was going to be immediately forgotten. Because the truth is, there's no obligation to share, right? There's an opportunity to share. There's a method to share. There's an allowance of sharing data, but there's not a requirement to do so. And I think that unless it's a really, really big, significant cyber threat, in which case multiple companies are already going to know about it, probably be sharing information on something of that size. Or, somebody gets caught with their pants down and says, oh, well, but we're going to share all this information to protect others in, a show of good publicity. I think most of these cyber threats are going to be something that's attacking some vulnerability in a company's own system or own network. They're not going to want to share that. They're not going to say, this is how someone's attacking me, and by the way, this is the weakness in my system that they're attacking. So I don't know that a lot of people are going to be sharing this information with the government or with a competitor company. Because, if the competitor company gets hit too, well, okay. So I'm not sure that this is something that's really going to get a ton of use. And frankly, here we are in September, and I did the same research that Xavier did. I haven't seen any data on anyone actually using this system. Now, could be that they're not publishing data, but I can't find anything that says it's being used at all.
So we got two questions here. Do we have the cube? Is that around? So you got a little microphone cube, and we're recording all the sessions. So that's why we want to use the microphone. Turn it on. Turn it on. That's
it. Question?
The first one was this gentleman in the front.
So I come from the insurance industry, and one of the biggest issues that we're finding right now is cyber liability, data breaches, mm-hmm. network piercing, things like that. So I'm not exactly familiar with this law, but one of the things I heard earlier was, you know, ways to protect yourself from liability by utilizing this law. Could you give a little more information about that? Because that could be relevant to what I do in the future in my industry.
You want to take that?
Yeah, I mean, it basically says that, you know, by sharing the data, you are kind of, you know, you have limited, it's according to who you're sharing it with, but if you do it by the guidelines, the regulations, that you basically have no or little liability for sharing that data. So basically, if you know, something bad happens because the data, you know, happened, you know, whatever, there's no ramification. So basically, they're trying to, you know, put the speed bumps, you know, lower the speed bumps down to say, it's okay, please share. If you do, you know, nobody can sue you because you shared. Is that type of liability coverage?
Yeah, it's to encourage the sharing, but it's also it protects it. So when you do share data, you know, one of the things this act says is that you're supposed to take reasonable steps to remove any non-necessary personal data. Now, that's a whole lot of language that means probably we're not going to do anything, and we're just going to share all the personal data. But even presuming that you do, you know, try to redact certain things, some personal data slides through, or some personal data is a necessary component of the cybersecurity attack that you're sharing the information on. So if I give out your name or your social security number or your health records or things that would normally be something that would be prohibited from sharing, this would reduce the liability or eliminate the liability on you sharing those things, so long as you followed all of the guidelines in the act and the suggestions of how to follow it. It doesn't remove any liability from the cyber attack itself, if you would have any. You know, so whether you share or don't share doesn't impact any liability you may have. It's just that if you do share and you do it properly, I can't sue you for engaging in that sharing.
Yeah, privacy, HIPAA violations, things like that.
Do you have to?
You need the cubes. We're recording.
Do you have to? When you do it properly, do you have to include certain language that says we will share under only certain circumstances and our here's our privacy policy and things like that? Is that part of that?
You know,
when you say,
well, it's not part of
due diligence. Where do you have to? How often do you have to warn somebody that you will be sharing data?
You know. I mean, the act provides for that allowance of sharing data. It is not it exists, right? It is now the law of the land. So there is no requirement that I tell you that the law exists any more than I tell you that cops might arrest you for speeding if you speed. You know, I don't have to get a letter every 6 months that reminds me that I shouldn't speed. So to the extent that you have a privacy policy or you run a website or some kind of web-based entity and you have terms of service or a EULA or something else that states a specific privacy policy, it's probably good business sense to go ahead and add something into that privacy policy that says, to the extent allowed or required by law, we will share data to prevent cybersecurity threats under the, you know, Cybersecurity Act. But you don't need to. I mean, it's there. It's there for the exact purpose of sharing data, and that's what the law provides for. So,
yeah. So, just looking over the section in the law about the limited liability, section 106, basically in that, you know, it does refer to, you know, in accordance with the guidelines, and that I don't have available. But you know, in the case which a cyber threat indicator or defensive measure is shared with the federal government, the cyber threat indicator or defensive measure is shared in a manner that is consistent with other sections of the bill, and the sharing or receipt, as it may be, you know, and it kind of goes through those. And so, it's basically to say, that, you know, by participating and sharing in this manner, you're not going to be, on the hook for that liability of that data itself. And so just gives protections along those lines.
All right. Yeah, my question is about if the person does have some of their data effectively put out, and since they can't sue the company, what kind of recourse do they have to recoup from the loss?
That's the privacy concerns, right?
Right.
And so there was no, EFF was trying really hard, not necessarily kill the bill, but that there was, fix the privacy provisions. There was a proposed amendment that failed that was supposed to, put in those privacy restrictions, and that was it. Department of Homeland Security was going to be the main, arbitrator right. of that, and ensured that all data was cleansed of personal information. But that amendment failed, and so that's why kind of up in arms. And when it passed, is that it passed without those additional privacy protections, and so anybody can if you share through this act. You're not liable for that information, in itself.
And to be clear, it's not quite that black and white. I mean, don't get me wrong. We both have these concerns, as do many other privacy groups. The act, though, does not say feel free to share personal information willy nilly. The act speaks to, and the guidelines very specifically require, a company sharing data to expunge any non-necessary personal data. The problem is, as far as I read that, is that there's two sort of caveats to the expunging data requirement, which is one, if it's part of the cyber threat, and how you determine that, I guess, is going to be expressly case-by-case, fact-based kind of scenario. But it also doesn't really provide a lot of guidance on what happens if you don't. I mean, you could potentially find yourself outside the limitations on liability and liable for sharing data. But did you take reasonable care? Did you have a way to know that data was there? Do you have to go through and review all of what you're sharing, or am I sharing, data sets that may contain elements of data that I didn't review? There's still a lot of ways that I can foresee data getting out, but at least in a technical sense, we are not supposed to be sharing that personal data. I think that it's potentially there, and that's a risk, but the act does at least try to limit that risk to some extent.
Yep.
Sorry.
I've got
four people waiting.
Yeah.
I like to speak loudly.
No, there's somebody with a microphone right behind you.
Yeah, we got other people.
I had a question about, you were saying about people sharing with the government. What about the other way? And also, probably like a follow-up, people not using this is because they're afraid of all the crap like with HIPAA. It seems like people don't want to share medical records and stuff anymore because HIPAA. Sometimes it's just stuff you need, but anyway, what about government sharing with companies about data they
collect?
There used to be
some new programs where that would happen, and it was a pain to get into. You had to have, according to the size of the company and the involvement, number of your staff, going through that would have security clearances, and then you could get approved to be on. So the FBI was, InfraGuard had programs, CIA had similar programs, and now with DOD and Department of Homeland Security kind of wants to be that arbitrator between all the Army cyber, Air Force cyber, and whatnot, and so like I said, those programs have existed in some part with the FBI and CIA that I know of. Now it kind of clears out some of the the red tape to be able to participate in those programs. Is it a game changer from the value of the data they get? Sometimes it's really according on, you know, your company, your threat model, you know, that what's your company protecting itself against, because you know you're not necessarily, you know, if you're running a printing shop, you know, in your local community, you're not going to have the same threat actors as the FBI and the CIA, and so it's so the data is there. I did want to take a quick caveat step aside to kind of talk about what we talk about in indicator of compromise and the kind of data that is being shared. You know, while there's definitions in here, they really don't really exclude much. So the possibility of sharing, you know, things like medical records, sure, but you know what we're really looking at is where are the bad guys. What can I do to know, you know, which IPs on the web are good and versus bad, right? We know of the infrastructure in which many of the state-run actors work off of. You know, they have hack servers that we, you know, and that we were able to track those to an extent and be able to say, you know, if you're communicating to these known IPs, that we already know that that's already bad. And so there is... It was about 3 years ago it cropped up, all these new companies about, look, I've got, indicators of compromise, you know, data that I can, you know, sell you. And so all these companies came up and kind of built up research labs to be able to kind of start selling and sharing this information as an intellectual property. And so the idea here is to kind of not have a huge firewall up between, you know, public agencies and to be able to get to that data. Yep.
So I'm a total neophyte here and just want to be sure that I'm clear. It sounds like with CISA, it does quite a bit to protect or keep them from being liable organizations and corporations that are sharing this data, but does very little to protect the individual who is that data.
Absolutely correct. Yeah. 100% correct.
To.
Yep.
Yeah. So well, you know, the government answer, to play devil's advocate for a minute, would be that we're protecting the individual by keeping your data safe from the cyber threat that's you know, attacking the company and keeping other companies' data secure. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, obviously we're not supposed to be sharing your information with the bad guys. We're supposed to be sharing it with the other companies and with the government to keep the data more secure. But yeah, in the end of the day, if that involves transfer of your personal data, then it does.
Get Mike over to the next person that I've been waiting. You good? Okay. I got it. Yeah. And then you're next.
So I haven't read the technical details that you kept referencing to, but I'm kind of trying to visualize what kind of data we're talking about, because is this just like proposing a constant feed of logs, or is this actually like a completed incident report with all of the details that describe the incident?
Both. I mean, is what we're looking at is that, you know, when a team, you know, discovers a particular threat actor and its methods, you know, being able to completely finish that research and know all the aspects before they share, you know, is fairly common. And so being able to then, you know, release those details, you know, and especially, you know, state-run actors, that would be, you know, if you're a private company and you discover this stuff, you know, a lot of people will publish for you know, publicity and try to gain credibility for the company. But that if it is, you know, is an active threat that, you know, is threatening the, you know, security grid or something like that, you probably would want to go talk to the government first, right? And then being able to then share the data that you used in that research to be able to know all of that about that particular threat actor. Now there's, you know, a way that you don't have to, you know, sign away, you know, the entire company's, you know, ability to share data. It, you know, you've got this avenue of being able to just, you know, share that specific set of data. On the other side, the other thing is that, you know, flow of real-time data, real-time logs, because you know, hacked systems are very, you know, fluid and change, you know, quite often throughout the day. And so those type of intelligence feeds, there's both private and public feeds that are available. And so, you know, being able to use, you know, both of those kind of help, you know, raise the value of that data, to be able to minimize false positives and to know that, you know, when you get that kind of known command and control connection, that you can, you've got something real and you can respond appropriately.
The amount of live feed that a large company produces is enormous. Like,
well, right,
so, terabytes of just garbage.
And if you're using a managed security company, for example, like Dell SecureWorks, right? They've got all that data together, and while divided up to, you know, from a technical perspective, that they can then look at the bigger picture and be able to provide, you know, a concise feed to its customers, saying, you know, of all the bajillion endpoints that we manage, you know, here's our threat data, here's where we know that, you know, where bad things are happening, you know, particular vulnerabilities or exploits that are happening right now. You know, they have a good enough footprint, and that's the same with, you know, internet or IBM and other, you know, large managed security shops. And so the idea is that right now there's a commercial set of that data, and then there's the government set of that data, and CISA was kind of put in place to kind of help merge that data, so we can all be better prepared and defensible against attacks. That's the idea, the good side of what CISA is supposed to do, but that, you know, like I said, it's the devil's in the details there. But that's exactly.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. So they have actually specified like formats and types of data that they want,
no,
and how it's packaged.
Nope.
Okay. No, I mean not in the realm of like I said, a CISA bill. It's I said there's previous programs that, you know, that still exist, but, you know, whether or not you know, how easier they are to use now that CISA is around, you know, still unknown.
Have they funded an organization to do those details?
They've established a organization to set out the guidelines for which to follow, and then the data goes to
Is it DHS?
It is DHS. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But the bill provides for sharing of cybersecurity threat indicators, and it defines that term in the bill as basically anything you think is potentially showing a problem. So, I mean, it can be everything as detailed as your already refined security logs that show to the nuance every detail of that attack, or it can be, hey, we think there's a problem, we're going to dump everything on you. And that actually speaks to one of the things that I think is probably one of our greatest protections to privacy in this bill. Is the only thing I see happening, and hey, bear in mind, I'm a bit of a cynic, and I'm not in the tech world, and I have no control. But the way I read this bill, I only see one of two things happening. Either one, nobody uses it at all, which is my first thought. Or two, people start using it, and then everybody thinks, oh, well, we want to be on the bandwagon. We don't want to be the company who didn't share data. We don't want to be the company who gets, you know, caught in the bad PR of, we get a cyber attack and our customers are now vulnerable or been injured in some way, and we're the ones who didn't share data. So everyone's going to start sharing every bit of data that comes in, and it's going to be so much noise that everything just gets lost. So either there's going to be zero data or so much data that it's useless. And unfortunately, it's designed to be the middle ground, but I just don't know that companies are going to play that way. There's not a lot of incentive to do that.
Yeah, suppose you go back 5 years and you read your terms of service if you're an individual, and for companies, it's your service level agreement and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell you that, well, yes, we're going to encrypt it to a certain level or something like that, But they also say that we will provide a key to the government if we're given a court order. And then we're talking 5-8 years ago or something like that, because these things, these phrases have been in SLAs and others.
Usually they don't get that precise. They'll say in accordance with local U.S. government law. You know?
Well,
so that kind of gives
it depends on who you're.
Yeah.
The terms of service, you just actually have to read it. But years ago, if they were saying things like that, because if they were using the word Patriot Act or if we think that you're doing something evil, a lot of the social media people, you know, have these types of things in there. They were worried about getting sued. So my question is, does this close any loopholes for terms of service and service level agreements and things like that?
Well, to the extent that it gives that limitation of liability on such transfer. I mean, if the reason that I'm saying I'm going to keep your data private is because I think you're going to sue me if I don't, but I now have an avenue to share information, whatever that information may be, whether it includes your data or not, with a limitation on liability, as long as I do it properly, then yeah, I'm not going to concern myself with what my terms of service say or what my users might sue me for, because that's exactly what this law allows for, is to allow me to share cyber threat data without worry of liability.
Yeah, and again, you know, terms of service, it's really interesting to see which, you know, different phrases and words have actually gone and been tested in court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we can talk a lot about, you know, the crazy crap that they throw in there, but, you know, it's a, you know, if you use our software, I can go into your house and eat, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I mean, you can't just, you know, put crazy stuff in and think that it's just, you know, law. It's like, you know, I put up a sign in my office and therefore it's, you know, I can do it. You know, as a U.S. company, you still have to follow U.S. laws. And there are U.S. laws for, you know, a legal intercept. If you're, you know, telecommunications, there's, you know, subpoena power. And there, those type of things you don't have to put in your privacy policy or your SLA, because everybody in the nation has to do these type of things. And so, you know, I just wrote my policy, privacy policy for my company, you know, a couple months ago, and you know, it went through, and I made sure that, you know, look at all the guidance and what's required by law and what's not, and in general, you know, if the U.S. government comes and requests data, you know, it's you know, I either say yes or no, and if I say no, I get a lawyer up and figure out why I can legally say no, and that's completely not connected to a terms of service or any of the EULAs.
In terms of service, you got to remember, it's just a contract. It's a contract between me and my user. And at the end of the day, we can contract to a lot of things, but I can't contract to not comply with a court-ordered subpoena for you.
Right.
I can't contract to avoid, you know, sharing information that's subject to search and seizure or some other. So to the extent that we have a contract, that contract can still be trumped by other law. I think we have another.
So this limits liability with corporations sharing with the government. What about corporations sharing with corporations?
So
yes.
So both. You actually get more limited. You get complete liability coverage between company and company, ironically.
Okay. So is there a way we can, like, kind of turn this around on them? Like, so I get an email from Dropbox saying, you should reset your password. Everything's fine. Don't worry. And if I wanted to, you know, get the real technical details on that, they'd tell me to go pound sand. And if I sued them for those technical details, they'd probably say, we can't privacy. Now, with this, indemnifying them on those privacy concerns, can I now sue them and say, hey, you need to give me the details so that I know exactly what happened, and you can't say privacy because now there's this law?
In essence, no. That, you know, that now lawyers can get creative, you know, and you can sue for anything and make your legal case and argue arguments, and so you know, you can always do that. My opinion is that, you know, this is a the liability restrictions here is just basically a protection mechanism to enable companies to do this. It is not something that can be enforced. There's no a way of making a company, you know, do this anything under CISA.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. I'm pretty creative, and I still wouldn't take that case, because the truth is that, like I said at the beginning, this allows, but it does not require. So there is no one required to share data, and you wouldn't be able to force them to share data that could be shared under this act. The government can't force them to share data that could be shared under this act. They have to decide to share data, and if they do, they're okay. So that's the limitation on liability. It's not anything that definitely allows for forcing someone to share information that might be related to cybersecurity.
Okay, another question?
Okay, interesting discussion a little bit about the terms of service. I did want to point out Shankar Vedantam at NPR's Hidden Brain did a study a couple weeks ago and found that, like, the vast majority of people agreed to hand over their firstborn child and share their life's history with the NSA in the terms of service. So I question how useful those terms of service are. But
hire me and let's see if we get the firstborn. I mean, no, the truth is that, you know, there's a lot of stupid stuff in there, but it is a contract. It is something that you could try to enforce. Whether a court would actually uphold that, but in general, most things in terms of services, no matter how sort of one-sided or draconian they may be, are absolutely enforceable. So that's why every Dragon Con I'm sitting here saying, why do you keep clicking your stupid I accept button without reading what you... Because if you actually read that stuff, we'd never use any product. We'd be sitting there chiseling crap on rocks, and the chisel would probably have terms of service we wouldn't want to agree to. So it's you know, at the end of the day, we give up a lot of privacy. We give up a lot of personal right because we want to use the cool toy.
And enforceability comes down to it. Like, has that language been tested in a court of law? You know, what provisions would the the company have to be able to, or what provisions would the defendant have, and to be able to say that this contract is invalid for various other reasons?
Yeah, and so speaking of never using a product, TJ, you make the point earlier about how companies, rightfully so, would be reluctant to share information under this act. And due to the sheer sensitivity of the information we're talking about, if it's in the federal space, it automatically becomes controlled, unclassified. If it's certain infrastructure, it's secret or top secret. So to that end, is there anything in the law that talks about maybe some key performance indicators? And we talk about doing things for the greater good. Hey, in the public health space, if we vaccinate people, you know, we can look and say, hey, we eradicated polio. Is there anything in the law that is talking about how we're going to measure the performance of this? Or is it all kind of a black box at this point?
No, I mean, they give a definition of, there's the two terms that they use. It's called cyber threat indicators. And the other one is defensive measures, and so there's some broad definitions around that, but that's just to put a name on what we're sharing, so that they can just reference something as they go through this. And this is this thing that we're talking about, and you know, when you do the share this thing, and this thing, and so they just put a name on it. This is a legal instrument, not guidance in how to best use it. Right. And so, you know, that's where we looked at other, you know, NIST and CIA does some publications and of you know, kind of best practices and whatnot. And so, again, there's that, you know, public-private availability. But the idea is now is that, we should have, you know, the ability. Of course, nobody is going to, you know, expect that we're going to get, you know, ARPA net or, you know, secret net IPs in a, you know, feed that they're going to share outwards, right? But that, you know, maybe, you know, after, you know, Army goes and squashes this particular attack, they can let us know, you know, how, you know, how they did it. And here's the file hashes. Here are the, you know, the methods in which they did it. You know, now that, you know, people can share those particular details with you know, this level of protection.
You know, and the truth is that the Act provides for the ability to do it, not any meaningful idea of how it should, how much it takes to be successful, right? Because I mean, the government doesn't care if you send out hundreds of thousands of cyber threat indicators or defensive measures. Hundreds of thousands of those are shared by companies every day, and nothing actually gets prevented. It may not be that useful a bill, right? One thing gets shared in the 10 years the bill has before it sunsets, but it's one really big thing that stops one really major cyber attack. This has been the most successful bill ever. So the government doesn't really have any meaningful analysis of what is or isn't a successful bill. They've put this in place so it can work. The policy, you know, the policy is the same one that we had when after 2001 we all realized, oh, the FBI and the NSA and the CIA can't share data with each other. And if they had, we might have known some different things. So maybe we should let them talk to each other. Well, it's that same policy now. We have private companies who are taking these threats and the ones being, you know, being attacked, and they're taking defensive measures, and these defensive measures are working. Wouldn't it be great if they could tell their other businesses what defensive measures work against these attacks? Wouldn't it be great if they could tell the government what attacks were happening? So it's more of a policy that it's a good idea to share this kind of threat information amongst various entities so that it can be all congregated and acted upon, rather than any kind of, we need to have 16 points of data shared a day, or it's not really going to be effective.
Question?
Yes. So the question I have is, so nobody's really, you have not found anybody that actually started working on joining this agreement and trying to share information. Have you heard of companies saying that they're going to, or and if willing to? Okay, then that's sort of, the next question was, were they willing to do it before it became public that they got hacked? And so even though nobody's planning on doing it, any information that is shared, is that also available via FOIA request, or is that protected under FOIA?
I was nodding in case for the folks in the back. Yeah, I mean, that's the research I came up with was nil, and nobody's mentioning using this as an avenue of sharing. I did just was going across my notes here and remembered that there was a reporting period of every 2 years, and that for the oversight of this bill is that there will be, you know, reports sent through Congress on the use of that. So, you know, I'll set my calendar and, you know, we'll do a FOIA request and find out you know, the usage of this in another year and a half. But, you know, in the meantime, owners, there is, I think I remember reading a section on ownership of data.
Well, the data, the company still owns the data, but the other whether it's being used and who may be filing and what filings are done, and certainly the congressional report would all be available by FOIA request.
Right.
I don't know that the data itself would be, because that would seem to defeat the idea of the bill. I mean, in other words, we're basically telling, if I'm the bad guy, I'm going to file a FOIA request, and I'm going to see what you found out about me and how you're defending it, and I'm going to go the other way. So I think that would be the type of data that would be redacted from any type of FOIA request. But the actual usage and information, I'm sure would be available by FOIA. Well,
right. I mean, right. Yeah, FOIA is
for the government. What needs to be reported to Congress, right? The government doesn't need to know what MasterCard and Visa are talking
about. I think if companies share the again, this is something that's a practical question, but just kind of see how it plays out. But I think the act assumes that if you're sharing company to company, there's going to be a report of that sharing as well.
If you do it, you know, via the CISA Protection Act is where you're going to be, you know, basically, if you're filing that information with, you know, the DHS and that if it's set up under CISA, and so that's the data that would be in those reports. But it's really there's not a lot of current restrictions on why companies can't share data.
Right.
You know, I do that all the time. There's a capital market for that. There's companies that sell it, and so that happens. And really, I would assume that the only reason that they would go through CISA is if they aren't new or had a high risk of sharing particular data. But that was in the company's best interest, public opinion involved, right? That they want to be able to share this data. And with this other company or something along those lines, some other situation where they need to share the data because of a non-technical reason, but that's very risky, and so therefore they're going to do it via CISA to get the liability protection.
Here's something that I just want to add, because I don't want to run out of time without talking, at least addressing this issue, because here's one of my biggest concerns about the Cybersecurity Act as it stands. We're talking so far only about the actual sharing of the information, right? Once I've determined there's a cybersecurity threat, and I've determined that I'm going to share certain information about that threat with the government or others, this is the process, and this is what we're talking about, and this is where our concerns of privacy and all that are coming in. But we're missing, I think, one of the biggest problems, privacy-related issues that arises out of this bill, which is the monitoring provisions. The Cybersecurity Act seems to, at least in potential, greatly broaden the ability to monitor information going across your network. The Cybersecurity Act allows a company to monitor any information that may lead to discovery of a cybersecurity threat, or to hire someone to do that monitoring for them. And I don't think it's too big a stretch of the imagination to say, well, the best way to catch all cybersecurity threats is to monitor all data and to track all transactions. Now, you know, I'm a business. I'm going to be conducting business. I don't have time to hire employees to sit there and listen to your data or read all your emails or look at all your web traffic or any other things. But I certainly can think of a security company that might want to do that, especially given the nature of how much that information might then be able to be used to create defensive measures or other things that are sold for quite a lot of profit. So my biggest concern with this bill is that it seems to wipe away all the limitations that used to exist on actually monitoring networks, right? Back when old Ma Bell was the one monitoring your usage, it was, well, I get to pick up the call at the very beginning, and I get to listen for a very short time, and I get to see if I can identify the person by their voice or because they say, hi, this is Bob Smith, or whatever, and try to identify the threat from that. And then I have to hang up because I can't listen to the call and I can't share the call with the government. This bill doesn't seem to have any of those limitations, again, other than the fact that we should excise unnecessary privacy information. I don't see any limitation on me hiring a security firm to monitor every single bit of information that passes through my network. And that's my biggest concern with the bill.
And that, you know, information that is fed into the government, will it be part of the intelligence infrastructure?
Mm-hmm.
That's the other, you know, is this an extension of the intelligence community's ability to collect data? It was not intended in its form to write that, but that there isn't protections in place. The oversight is written in as a kind of a standard oversight. There's nothing that really jumps out as like this is different from other bills, and we're going to have amazing oversight, and I'm not going to worry about it because they're going to tell us all the stuff that they do. It'll be a standard kind of congressional oversight, and then which EFF and will be doing the FOIA request and making sure that they're actually following and not just using it as a backdoor for another legal framework for the CIA just to do whatever they want. Where are we at with the box? Yep.
So I have a question about the legal ownership of this data at the different stages where it's shared between two private entities, between a private entity and the government. What are the mandates as far as when it becomes part of public domain? When is it still private data? Like what options do companies have, and what are they forced into doing? Like, how does that change?
I don't have the bill in front of me. Xavier does. So
yeah, I'm seeing if I can.
I don't recall off the top of my head any language in there that creates a scenario where the data becomes public domain. Again, the idea that I can share doesn't mean I have to share. The data is still my data, and to some extent. Again, my thought, this is not coded in the bill, but my thought would be that it becomes less useful the more it gets publicly shared, right? Sharing it amongst a company who can create the same defensive measure, sharing it amongst the government who can investigate the threat, makes the threat less viable. Sharing it broadly, publicly, and widely means the threat now knows what we know, and is going to take a different avenue. So I don't think at any point the act, and I don't recall anything in the act that anticipates this data being shared with the general public or becoming public domain. It only allows for the sharing of data amongst people who could use that data to defend themselves. So do you see anything different than
no.
I do then?
Nope.
I mean, I'm one guy who read the act, and I don't have it in front of me, so I don't know how it's going to ever be interpreted.
Private to private, there's you're going to have a clause in there that says here's who retains ownership of that, especially when it comes to managed security services and things like that on who owns that data and who can, and not only can do stuff with that data, but then also has the liability of that data and the who is responsible for securing it for other type of laws, and so those have been pretty well nailed out since we've been doing this for a couple of years now.
You mentioned earlier that before this bill, the data used to almost be like sold as a premium towards other companies.
Yeah, still is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but. After this bill, when you share data with another company, are they then allowed to share that data as they will, or is it based on the first company who had the data?
If you're going to share from a private contract, that we're just going to go into a contract between two entities, that contract, the answer to your question will be laid out in that contract, right? Okay. Is the ownership and rights of that data, and whoever owns that data, can they share it with somebody else? If they go through the CISA provisions to entitle that, there's no provisions in here that change who owns stuff and whatnot. So there's still going to be that clause of intellectual property rights of who owns and has rights over that data. One thing that's interesting is when you talk about ownership of data and you're talking about public data and the privacy laws, and we were talking about earlier with EULAs, but specifically with privacy policies that are required to be published on websites and whatnot, you basically have to tell the public if you're collecting information from them and what you're going to do with that data. And if this, if I change my mind about that and I want to do more or something different with that data, how am I going to let you know? That's in essence what the privacy laws require you to. Those published privacy policies on websites, and so when dealing with public data that's not covered by HIPAA or PCI or something like that, that's the general laws. Basically, you have to duly inform your customers and people that are just even going to your website on data collection and use of that, therefore. And so two different things. I just wanted to kind of, talking about ownership of using the data and whatever method you want, and how much freedom do you have to then use it again. It's if you're collecting it directly from end user or a person on your website, you hit the privacy law. If you're already own the data and you've got provisions in your privacy policy for then selling or sharing that information through a third party, then you can do that. If your privacy policy says that we will not share or sell our privacy data to anyone, then you've got to change that before then you can use it, right? So that's the kind of a chain of legal requirements around privacy policy and then being able to work between two companies.
Now, in terms of the, I think I understood your question a little differently too. Let me make sure in terms of the question about whether under CISA, Target gets hacked and can share the information with Walmart, CISA doesn't really anticipate that Target's only going to call up Walmart. CISA anticipates that Target's going to then put that cyber threat indicator or defensive measure or whatever they're using to compete against that threat sort of into the pipeline. It's not going to go to Walmart. It's going to go to... So it's not a question whether Target tells Walmart and then Walmart can tell Sears. Right. It's Target's going to tell people, okay, and it's going to go into the pipeline and the CISA pipeline, and then shares out to there's a way to get the information that's being shared as a company and get you have access to what's coming in and what's going out. So it's not a person to person transfer under CISA, at least not anticipated to be.
That's what I was curious about, because like there are some companies I could see not wanting to share the protection or the preventive measures with every company because they're competing companies, but if it was selective and then if that company could then continue the share of information or not.
Yeah, and again, what we're talking about here is here's how you detect the threat and the technical file hashes, IPs, things like that, and not only how do you detect them, then how do you defend against them? So that's what where it's like the two different terminologies here. And so we're not saying here's how we fixed it, we bought this particular product, we put it in and installed it like this, and this helped mitigate that threat, and nobody wants to share the security, how we build our internal security. You don't want to make that public, right? But to say that to defend against this particular threat, if you restrict this particular registry key, that malware can't be installed. That type of defensive measure is the kind of you boil it down to that those are the like KPIs or the particular technical data that we're looking at sharing.
Just to geek out.
And this is going to be a last question here. It was at 3:30, so.
Well, I'm really glad the geek got to it. do you have an executive summary of technical advances in big data analytics that would address Mr. Minhull's monitoring concerns? In other words, you need the technical ability to use the monitor data.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious if you've been paying attention to, state of the art in big data analysis. That's all.
Yes. There's some really great stuff. Around that, I worked in the SIM industry, security information and event management for about 10 years, and then. Watch that evolve into, it's just stuff in a database to, actually useful stuff, and that, you can respond to it. Being able to then do deeper analytics on, finding the needle in the haystack. I'm not sure, relates to this.
Have a timeline of big data analytics that would apply to privacy, if you keep track of that every year, so you just simply January, all these advances were made. February, these advances were made. March, these advances were made.
I mean, it's a constant, you know, flow. From vendor world, from me, you know, saying from all the security vendors and what we're up to, it's usually two times a year around RSA and around Black Hat, you know, because they want to get as much public notice out of it as possible. So RSA conference in San Francisco is usually right on Valentine's Day. I haven't mentioned to my wife that I will be missing Valentine's Day yet. So hey, babe, I'll be missing Valentine's for RSA. So and.
So, Valentine's Day.
But that's generally where, you know, product, you know, the security vendors will release new stuff. But as for research and the way people are doing stuff, you know, that either comes out as a flow if they're just publicly putting it out, or, you know, there are security conferences going on all the time where you just find new ways of doing stuff. So. Well, I appreciate it. I mean, and you know, we made it to 3:30. Nobody fell asleep. I don't think. I haven't checked in the back yet.
I saw some clothes.
And so I really appreciate it. If you have any more questions, you know, come on up and we can answer a few more. But we really want to clear out this room. I think Scott's ready to go home.
Scott's done.
Yeah.